Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, coming at you live at the new time of 11 a.m. local New Zealand time till 1 p.m. because they've just had daylight savings in the United States, and it will roll back eventually to the 10 a.m. till midday time slot when New Zealand, the great delayers that we are, eventually give up daylight savings towards the end of this month or the next. I think we passed some kind of a law saying, look, I want to have barbecues for an extra month out in the sun. Okay, let's pass a law for it. And they did. Love this country. My very special guest is Kevin Moore. Kevin, I don't know nothing about you. So let's start with you introducing yourself so that both myself and the audience will be more familiar.
Well, I was born in England, in a place called Southampton on the south coast in 1950. Grew up in post-war Britain, so I actually looked at bomb sites as a child. So there was actually food rationing when I was born, and it didn't come off until 1954. My parents were working class, so I was very fortunate in that the system during the 1960s actually helped people like me, and I ended up with a university degree, an honours degree in chemistry, specialising in the structure of matter and industrial technology. And I've also got a postgraduate diploma in industrial technology. So with that background, I've worked in fertiliser works, tanneries. I've been technical sales representative. I've been an environmental consultant. But I've had the rug pulled from underneath me, basically, because with the globalisation, most Western societies don't have much in the way of manufacturing these days. It's all about basically drilling for oil, and if you're not into that game, there's not much else, to be quite honest. And I think, you know, we're all familiar with that story of pretty well all manufacturing going to China or other East Asian countries. So that's basically me. I've got an honours degree in chemistry. I do actually have some credibility when it comes to chemistry and physics. You know, I'm pretty good at that sort of stuff. You don't get an honours degree in chemistry if you can't work out a bit of basic maths. So my maths is pretty good. I've also studied geology. But what I found interesting throughout the 1980s and 90s was the structure of society and economics. And I became very interested in this aspect. I'd done a bit of basic economics at university and became more and more interested in this whole structure of the economic system because back in 1972, there had been the Limits to Growth agenda, the Meadows Group, and a lot of movement towards what we might call sane society based on conservation of resources and care for the environment. Well, basically, that all got crushed through the Reagan and Thatcher years. In New Zealand, we had Roger Douglas and what I call basically saboteurs, a free-for-all. Basically, loot the environment as quickly as you can, make heaps of money, Ponzi schemes, you name it. And so when it came to 1999, I was getting very, very concerned about what was happening. I wrote a book, and it was called Burn, Baby, Burn. And effectively, what I was saying is, well, we need to address these issues. Nothing's got any better since the 1970s. In fact, pretty well everything had got worse. Well, no New Zealand publisher would have a bar of it, not interested. It ended up being published in Taiwan under private sponsorship. But I was talking then about resource depletion, global warming, environmental degradation in general, the attack which was being made on community, on society by corporations. Well, that was not a wonderful success in terms of what I did it for, because I did this, not to make money, but in order to open up the dialogue, in order to get some constructive activity going within central government and local government. Well, we just got the nonsense for the next decade. I wrote another book called The Thinking Person's Guide to Surviving the Future in 2006 and updated that book. And I also wrote another book, 10 Things Everyone Ought to Know. Well, people just don't want to know. It's quite interesting, you know, this whole culture of denial, which your leading song basically emphasized. We, you know, who's awake? Most people are not awake, don't want to know, not interested.
The Western world has a bigger culture of denial than Egypt.
Oh, totally, yes. denial, totally. So this is the book I would say that everybody who can get access to it needs to read. Now, I called it The Easy Way because most people are going to learn the hard way. They won't read the book. They won't be like, oh, you're too gloomy. That will never happen. You name it. Every excuse you can think of as to why they should not become informed. I've sold a couple of hundred copies of that book, mostly around Taranaki, which, for the sake of people in the rest of the world may not know, that is in North Island of New Zealand. It's the bit that sticks out towards the west. It's got a fairly low population and normally reasonably good rainfall, which is why I moved here from Auckland, because I had to escape the madness. I was in Auckland. I ended up trapped there. Couldn't get out for a long time. Sold my house at below market value just to get out. And I did that in 2006. And for the last 7 years, I have been what we call prepping in America, preparing for the meltdown, which I know is coming. So that's basically who I am and what I've been up to. Take it to you.
All right. Well, we talk about environmental degradation all the time, and in my opinion, there's two types of environmentalists. The ones who actually care about the whole holistic idea of the environment and the human condition, and those who know nothing about the environment and are simply enacting incredibly hardcore socialism policies in order to control and enslave everybody through taxation. And this is the split I see in the environmental movement. Those who see humanity as the solution to the problem, and those who see humanity as the problem in and of itself.
I just need to interrupt you because there's the green mob who want to push greenwash, right? So they provide corporate-based solutions to these problems, which are not solutions at all. I prepared a few graphics, so I'd just like to sort of stick that one on the screen. We have got this thing called industrial civilization, and it is held up by a number of pillars. I've done it like a sort of a temple because a lot of people worship the markets, etc. So we've got this temple, and what are we doing? Well, industrial civilization is itself destroying everything that it needs in order to exist. So even if environmentalists did nothing, this system is going to crash. Yeah. So it's a very interesting situation. And you say, well, what are these pillars? And, well, as humans, we need these things. We need clean air. We need clean water. We need nutritious food, we need a suitable temperature, and we need biodiversity. And what does this industrial system do? Well, basically, it attacks all of those things. So without a stable environment, without biodiversity, without clean water, human life is basically going to be destroyed. But we've got other things like ocean pH, we've got sucking water out of the Ogallala aquifer. I mean, we're using water that's thousands of years old, faster than it's being replenished. So everywhere you look, this whole system is attacking everything that makes life possible and makes itself possible.
It's what I found really funny is it takes 4 litres of pure water to make a 1 litre water bottle that they sell to people, and then they give people municipal fluoridated water in order to do that. They're just nuts.
We actually managed to get fluoride out of the water in New Plymouth. It was a big battle, and what was really interesting, the council took no notice of any of the scientific evidence, basically, and it just swung down to one person voting in favour of taking the fluoride out because she was concerned about babies having fluoridated water in bottled milk, right, making up the milk powder, and she was a bit concerned that that may not be good for them. Otherwise,
that might have been the first time in history where somebody went, oh, please think of the children, where it actually wound up resolving to something good.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, this whole system is destroying life on Earth. Is biodiversity. Now, you see different numbers quoted between 200 and maybe more. But anyway, say 20 to 200 species a day being exterminated. But these are like frogs, they're amphibians, they're, you know, rare plants. So nobody takes too much notice. But now we're looking at elephants being exterminated. I don't know if you're aware of this. You know, the ivory trade, it's basically, they think, oh, you know, orangutans, about 15,000 orangutans left in the world. In Indonesia, I think it's 180 million people. So, you know, what chance do 15,000 orangutans stand against 180 million people?
Well, it depends whether or not the orangutans are gun owners, which they're not.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is the big one. I mean, there are a whole lot of factors which are going to bring us down, bring us to our knees. And the one that really is most important from my perspective is the CO2. Now, this is a taboo subject, and it's interesting you're saying, no taboo subjects. Well, this is taboo as far as government and council and corporations is concerned. You cannot talk about CO2 levels. But if we look historically, it's been about 280, or it was, sorry, 280 prior to the Industrial Revolution. And once Britain started to industrialize, they were digging coal out of the ground. Coal is a form of carbon which nature put in the ground. Basically, that putting that carbon underground stabilized the climate, made it suitable for humans. So what are we doing? Well, we've for the last 200 years, been digging up the coal and burning it. And then, of course, from about the early 1840s onwards, there was mass consumption of oil. Starting off with just a few barrels, then we get into the, you know, the hundreds of barrels, thousands of barrels, millions of barrels. Well, right now we're burning about 84, 85 million barrels of oil a day. 30 billion barrels a year. So this is going up in smoke, adding to the CO2 problem. We're burning natural gas. Any activity in an industrial society is dependent on energy. Without energy, nothing happens. So we're doing this. So we're here now. We're very, very close to 400 parts per million. Now, a lot of people say anything above 350 is not safe because we're going to be triggering positive feedbacks. So that's the big one. And where is that going to lead us? Well, the term that is now being discussed amongst the people who are awake is NTE, near-term extinction. Sometime between 2040 and 2080. Now, I'm a parent, and my son and my daughter have both got children, so I'm a grandparent. Well, this kind of time frame basically means an uninhabitable Earth before their natural lives, you know, come to an end. This is frightening. This is the one issue which should be tackled by everybody. And most people don't want to go. No, government's not interested. Council's not interested. It's scary, Vince. Well, and anybody else is.
Are you joking? Are you saying that governments and the mainstream media and all these mainstream protest organizations aren't focused on carbon taxes and climate change and everything like that? We've already passed carbon taxes in New Zealand. They passed carbon taxes in Australia. Obama's going to force carbon taxation in America as well. What are you talking about?
Vince, carbon taxes is just a financial scam, right? It's nothing to do with dealing with the problem. All that carbon taxes do is allow money lenders and corporations to profit from the degradation of the planet, right? I mean, carbon taxes do not alter this. This graph continues on up and will do so as long as we keep burning fossil fuels.
But of course, if you take it back, if you take it way back, I think it was back in the, I think, what was it, the 1700s or 1600s? Had a medieval warm period, was far higher temperatures than we did today, didn't they?
That's the great myth that everybody wants to believe. Because that way, and this is all put out by Mobil, Exxon, they put millions of dollars into climate change denial. They keep feeding all this stuff about medieval. Well, there's a very recent report. We are now, the Earth is hotter than it has ever been since the dawn of humanity. Right? Mm-hmm. There was a warmish period, but from about 1400, the Earth is cooling off. Now, in the 1700s, London froze over. People were actually ice skating on the Thames. And there was a great fear that we were
headed. The little ice age.
Into an ice age. Through the 1950s and 60s, there was a lot of concern that we were headed into a mini ice age. The temperature was actually dropping. Now, I lived through the winter of 1963 in Britain, and the temperature was below zero for 3 months. Ice and snow, and this is in Southampton, right? Well, since then, it's gone the other way. So, we're heating the Earth faster than ever has happened before. And this is just coming back to what I was saying about my study of chemistry, because the CO2 absorbs radiation and re-radiates it downwards towards the Earth. So it's a greenhouse gas. It's trapping heat. And so the Earth is warming up. Hence, well, look, temperatures in Australia this year, hottest ever. They had the highest ever average temperature of 40.3 degrees Celsius, maximum temperature. Now New Zealand, the worst drought in history.
All right, hold on, Kevin. We're coming to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Moore on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's friggin' gorgeous down here, and the economy's going well because it's Fukushima irradiated, and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Kevin Moore. Kevin, welcome back. Now, we got interrupted by a break earlier. What were you saying?
Well, look, here's the graph, basically. The temperature of the Earth, and this is only just roughly drawn. It's just a guide. It's not, you know, it's not designed to be scientifically accurate. But basically, we had an ice age. The temperature of the Earth dropped a bit, right? So you then had much of Britain covered in ice. Ice shield came down over Canada, much of the northern United States. And then the temperature came up again. Now, what's really important, all these cycles in the past were due to the Earth's orbit. Now, the Earth goes around the sun, but it's not a circular orbit. It's elliptical. And that ellipse moves slowly around, and the Earth wobbles. And the effect of this, plus volcanic activity, is that the temperature of the Earth has gone up and down in the past quite considerably. But with this CO2 thing, now, well, it depends who you talk to. There has been general discussion of a 2-degree rise in temperature by the end of the century. But, you know, the 2 then becomes 4, and the 4 then becomes 6. Well, if we are actually headed for a 6-degree rise by perhaps the middle of this century, that makes most of the Earth uninhabitable. Now, 6 degrees sounds fine. You think, oh, yeah, that's balmy, yeah, we'll worry about all that, you know. It's 20 degrees in New Zealand, so that makes it 26. But that's not what happens. What happens is most of the heating takes place around the Arctic. So we're looking at an ice-free Arctic region. That completely messes up the climate system. And this has already been happening. Wild swings in temperature, and Britain's been suffering. You know, first it was a drought, then it was torrential rain, high winds, then freezing conditions. And then, you know, a few days later, it's belting hot, and Australia, New Zealand. And what's really big in America, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, there's been a long-standing drought in the United States, particularly the central states, over a year now, of very, very low rainfall. Now, I was kind of isolated on a lot of this stuff until I met other people via the internet. And the big thing for me was when I got in contact, I'm just grabbing a poster here, of a guy called Guy McPherson. He's an American. Now, he's well known in the alternative community because he left his job as a professor because he could see where things were going, and he's devoted his time and energy to raising awareness of these climate and environmental issues. And I actually got him to come to New Zealand. He stayed with me, and it was great for me for 3 days to have somebody that was actually on the same wavelength, sane, knew what was going on. And he did a tour of New Zealand and even appeared on national radio. but it made not one iota of difference to anything because the government and the corporations are in control and they're not going to have that message because it interrupts the money flow. So anyway, so that's where we're headed. Unless we do something drastically very soon, the planet's going to overheat within decades. So I can't give you a time frame, but 2012 was the greatest meltdown of the Arctic region in all of history. We lost 600,000 square kilometers of ice. So people are talking about ice-free Arctic in the summer, not in the winter, of course, by about 2017. So, and that kicks in positive feedback. So you've got all the methane that's in the permafrost, the CO2, all that stuff basically triggering greater warming.
So yeah, we have reports by Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org that all the geoengineering chemtrail spraying that's going on is causing global dimming now. And there's also another feedback loop that he's now discovered where the methane deposits in the southern hemisphere and northern hemisphere are now starting to be released. And as the methane goes through the water, it actually raises or it lowers the pH and makes it more acidic and kills off all the animal and fish life and what have you.
No, that's not quite correct. Methane is being released from seabeds. In fact, last year in Russia in the summer, there are massive bubbles coming up. I mean, some of them were kilometres across. Methane actually is chemically neutral. It doesn't lower the pH, but what it does, it gets into the atmosphere and increases the global warming, but then it gets oxidised naturally to CO2, and CO2 does depress the pH. So we're attacking the corals and the plankton, which make life possible in the oceans by lowering the pH. They won't be able to form shells. And again, this is chemistry. See, the whole world is actually a huge geochemical system and physical. And we're attacking the basic chemistry which makes life possible on Earth. And that's scary. And of course, most people have got no idea because they're not chemists. And it's not their fault. That's not a judgment on them. But the point is the people that should be doing something about this don't listen to the chemists. They don't listen to the physicists. They don't listen to the mathematicians. The only people they listen to are basically economists. So everything is about the economy. And we just get this rammed down our throats constantly. As far as I'm concerned, there are actually only two issues that really matter for most people, and nobody other than this very small group of people who are awake are even aware of them. The first issue is, how do we prevent abrupt climate change? In other words, the temperature going so hot that the Earth becomes uninhabitable. And how do we prevent mass starvation? Because the industrial food system is going to collapse. And I can't tell you when, but sometime over the next decade or so, we're going to have shrinking food supplies. Now, just think, referring to the drought in New Zealand, for example. Now talking about, we're not going to get the milk production that we thought we were going to have. Then we're going to slaughter a whole lot of animals. Then we're not going to have, the animals to produce milk. So if the grass does grow, you look at what's happening in America, it is dire. They're looking at a situation worse than the great Dust Bowl of the 1930s. They're not there yet, but that's where they're headed. And the latest forecast that I've read says that the drought in the US is set to intensify, not ease. So it's food for thought. So those are the two issues, as far as I'm concerned. We need to stop pouring CO2 into the atmosphere. We need to, stabilise the climate. It may actually already be...
Kevin, hold on a second here. Can you name me a single human activity that doesn't produce CO2?
Let's just get this clarified. There's produce CO2 by breathing, and there's extract CO2 from out of the ground and put it into the atmosphere. Now, normal living doesn't actually increase the CO2 level. To go back to my previous graph, the CO2 level was about 280 for centuries. Didn't change. And there were 800 million, 1,000 billion people living on the Earth, all breathing and doing stuff, and not significantly changing the CO2 level.
Does solar output at all change CO2 release levels or anything?
No. This is another red herring. The change in the value of the solar output is minuscule. It goes from like 1366 to 1367. It's microscopic in terms of the whole big story. But you see, the global corporations don't want you to know this. They don't want you to make the connection with burning fossil fuels, with the lifestyle. Because once people en masse understand that, then there's big trouble for global corporations and moneylenders. Well, there's big trouble anyway, but it's a self-defeating system. But it's all about total short-term thinking. Just keep this Ponzi scheme going as long as possible. So, look, you can take that or not, but I'd like you to just think about it 5 years from now and say, oh, bloody hell, that guy Kevin Moore, you know, what he said, because everything that I wrote 10 or 11 years ago in that book is now happening. You know, we are burning up the planet. And in China, of course, they've gone completely mad and they're killing themselves with pollution in order to produce stuff. So this is not a judgment on society, but it's just simply a fact. Most people are scientifically illiterate. They don't have degrees in chemistry or physics. Not their fault. That's just the way it is. So I don't blame ordinary people for that fact that they don't understand chemistry. It's not their fault. But they're also financially literate. The vast majority of people haven't got a clue how the money system works. I mean, my bone of contention is governments and central government and local government, because those people should be dealing with this stuff, and they are not. Now, I've spent a decade doing submissions to council. Last submission process, I put in 20% of the material for the submissions. Nearly 400 pages, and they take absolutely no notice of anything anybody says and just carry on with the insane agenda of getting communities into debt and burning fossil fuels.
So, you know, I'd say, what do you expect when you're giving something as a submission? I mean, what does that say?
Oh, yes. Now, I mean,
I'm submitting. Yes, oh, powerful, godly government. Oh, yes, oh, a powerful, godly government. I submit.
Yes. These people are basically fascists. Oh, you can't say that. Yes, you are. You're fascist. Because most people don't understand what fascism is.
Now, the corporations control the government.
Totally. And moneylenders and corporations. And we've got these lackeys. And I've got a diagram a bit later on in my series here. But that's the situation. So anyway, coming back to it. So but, you know, there were some visionaries. And you read Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, 1931. I mean, we're talking 80 years ago. That guy was onto it. The only thing he didn't realize was resource depletion and environmental decay. So he's had helicopters flying around. But in terms of genetic engineering, this whole society of alphas at the top, everything is geared to the pleasure-seeking alphas, and you've got the betas, and they're happy that they're betas, because it would be worse to be a gamma and the deltas, and then you've got the epsilons at the bottom. They just do all the drudgery, and everybody's dumbed down with soma, the happiness drug, you know. And this is the society we're living in combination with. And the important thing he said was people will actually love their state of slavery, and they do. And you say to people, "You're a slave." No, I'm not. I said, "You know, debt slavery, mortgages." Oh, no, I'm free to do that. Blah, blah. And, of course, they're not, because they've been trained to be stupid. So they are, because, you know, the school system is gearing everybody to become a little minion of this whole industrial empire, which has been running since, well, the early 1600s, basically. It goes right back to around 1609, when the London Company set out to exploit resources in Virginia. And they hauled off all the
Was the Battle of Waterloo again? When was the Battle of Waterloo?
Waterloo was 1815.
Yeah. Because it occurred to me that that's when this whole industrialization and theft of resources and increase in slavery kind of started to really kick off. Was after the Rothschilds bought the Bank of England, and then they owned England, which owned Europe.
Oh, yeah, well, it was 1694 was the establishment of the fractional reserve banking system. So we've had that scam running since, you know, basically around 1700. But prior to that, this whole thing about going out and colonizing, killing off the natives, stealing the resources, that effectively started with Spain and Portugal and the Dutch, and then, of course, the British got in on the act, and the French. You know, oh, we were wonderful. We took Canada from the French. Aren't we marvellous, you know? Aren't we great people? And, of course, then it was the slaughter of the American Indians, the slaughter of the buffalo, and just constant creation of this whole industrial system. They came to New Zealand in the early 1800s to get whales, because there was a shortage of whale oil. And then, oh, yeah, this is a good place. We can, you know, we can knock over the Maoris and steal this land. No, we can't change history, but we do need to understand how it got there. And I actually cover all of this stuff in that book. So I'll just remind you, that really is important. If you actually want to know what's going on and why we're in this mess, please get a hold of that book. And it's published by Publish Me. And basically just go online, search.
When you say that book, just remember that this is on radio and people can't see what you're showing on the camera.
Okay, it's called The Easy Way. It's written by Kevin Moore, and it's published by Publish Me. And basically, if anybody wants to just log on to an internet site and then just search that title, it is available as an e-book. It costs people $5. Now, I mean, how cheap can it get? but people,
it could be free.
Well, yeah, I have sent it to free to people in the end. But, I mean, it costs a lot of time and energy and money to produce books. And you think, well, I wouldn't mind getting something back.
Well, what's been happening recently is a new form of money sourcing whereby you give out your products for free and then you ask people to donate if they like it, that kind of thing. There was this woman who's a musician, and she raised $1.2 million after getting out her album for free, which is about 12 times what she made as an artist with a record label.
Oh, of course, yes, because it's all about the profit for the record label. Well, actually, well, I mean, I've given this a heavy promotion within my district because, I mean, I'm not being selfish and stupid, but it's what counts in my own district that matters to me. So but I give these people and say, you know, pay me, and sometimes it's bloody hard to extract $20. You think, well, that's nothing. And, you know, but really hard to get money out of people if it's information that they need. No, but they're quite happy to go and spend, you know, $20 on a pizza or watch some crappy movie, you know? It's just people.
Yeah. Well, I see, it's unfortunate, eh? Yeah, I've always been surprised to find out just how much people prioritise making themselves unhealthy and stupid based on the society that we live in. All right. Kevin Moore is my guest. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week. If you're listening in New Zealand, just remember that we are doing the show an hour earlier in the interim, while the time zones do a little bit of a fluctuation. There's kind of like when the seasons change. New Zealand and America have their both different time zone changes. So when America changes, which I just did, we go to 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. local New Zealand time, Monday through Saturday. And then when we here in New Zealand change our time zones, it goes back again to from 10 a.m. till midday would be the new time changes. I think that'll be happening in about a month from now. So thank you for joining in. My very special guest is Kevin Moore, chemist and author and a dude who knows about the climate and what have you. Now, I was wondering what the proposed solutions are, because whenever the New World Order types propose solutions based on climate change, it's simply carbon tax, deindustrialize society, starve people to death, sterilize people, that kind of thing. Are you advocating any of that?
No, the real solutions to this problem are power down and permaculture. Now, both of those solutions are totally unacceptable to moneylenders and corporations. So,
can you define what they are?
Well, power down is using less energy, right? Our current lifestyle is depending where you are, on using energy at 100 times or 1,000 times the rate that we can use energy. So, and this happened because of the industrialization that took place in Britain and then spread around the world from about 1780 onwards. Prior to 1780, people used the amount of energy that landed on their patch over a year delivered by the sun, right? It was basically, that was how much energy they had access to. And that energy was captured by photosynthesis, via plants, leaves, animals, etc. Ate the plants. You could use the animals to plow the field or whatever it was. But it was still the amount of energy that landed on your patch and your area. Well, after you started using coal, well, then you had all this stored energy that nature put there maybe 300 million years ago. Getting that access to that energy meant that people could use more energy every day. And this was going up. And so we had this great growth in energy consumption. And now we're in this situation where people living in Western societies think that's normal. They think that using masses of energy is normal, but it's not. It's a huge aberration. You know, for all of humanity's existence, and let's say go back 2 million years, well, you know, for other than this period of, well, in Britain about 200 years, but in other places which develop later as short as 50 years, people have lived naturally. So, but that, you know, so, but coming back to this whole point, and I'd like to come back to that a little bit later if I can, Vince, because I've got something quite important that I want to show you. Now, there's a candle and there's an iron nail. And being a chemist, I know that I can stick this candle into the iron nail. I can hold that quite close. Now, I don't know if you know where I'm going to get to. I'd like to guess?
I don't know what the hell you're doing. I've never seen people deliberately place a nail into a candle flame before.
No, well, you see, my problem is I'm too smart, right? Now, that is actually starting to get a little bit warm now. You notice how close my fingers are to that, right? It's just iron is a very, very poor conductor of heat. And the melting point of iron is about 1,500 degrees Celsius. That candle flame is burning at about 300. Now, think about 9/11. So we had these very small, short-lived fires in the top of some steel-girded, steel-structured, steel-columned skyscrapers.
That were also covered in fireproof asbestos.
Yes, but they're right. And they fell down after a couple of hours, right? And Building 7, which wasn't even hit by a plane, fell down. I mean, it was obviously a demolition job. I mean, anybody with a brain can see that. It was a demolition job, and I've written about this in my book. And so I'll just put that candle out. Well, you see, most people accept the nonsense which is churned out by governments and corporations. They don't think. And they're not chemists, I don't know. I don't know what the explanation is. But anybody that thinks about that says, well, this whole narrative is a lie. When you look at it, you know, it's impossible. You have planes with titanium steel engines evaporate on contact with grass. Excuse me, you know, melting point of titanium, 1,600 degrees, doesn't vaporize to 3,000 degrees. You're getting halfway to the temperature of the sun to vaporize titanium. And yet this plane comes in, the Shanksville plane, disappears on contact with the ground, the Pentagon plane. Whoops, where did it go? Oh, well, it evaporated. Yeah, well, come on. I mean, well,
actually, the Pentagon plane didn't evaporate. They found the landing gear. They found the engines. They found everything in there. And what's the problem is the 9/11 Truth Movement show you pictures of the Pentagon, and there'll be a hose spraying the fire, and they completely obscure the first level. And then when you have a look at the other pictures where the water's not spraying, the entire first level, there's about 100 meters of full-on wingspan damage through the whole thing. And yet 9/11 truthers will only look at the hole where the central part of the plane went in and say, oh, it couldn't have fit into that tiny hole, while obscuring the rest of the evidence. And I only just found this out a while ago because my friend Ryan Dawson, he showed me the pictures, and it kind of like was like, wow, I had not believed for so long that a plane had gone into the Pentagon until I'd seen the evidence, and now I finally do. It's a big myth that's been perpetrated throughout our movement. It's pretty annoying.
Well, the point about the Pentagon is that there was one hole, right? You've got this twin-engine plane that crashed into it. So, you know, these three-ton engines bounced off the walls without making any holes.
No, you're not listening. The whole bottom floor was taken out. The engines went right into it. So did the wings.
No, not so, Vince. No, if you look at the original footage of the impact with the Pentagon, it was one hole. And the wreckage that was picked up off the ground of the Pentagon.
What original footage? They only released four frames, and they confiscated all the rest of the footage.
No. Yeah, exactly. All that surveillance footage from the car parks and hotels, etc., was confiscated. But there was some original footage which disappeared. But it was actually available for a very short time. And if you see that, there's one hole. And the wreckage was just one engine, very small plane, almost certainly a drone that fired a cruise missile. In other words, it's a false flag. But coming back to what I was talking about, Aldous Huxley, now the other great writer was George Orwell, and he wrote 1984. So in 1947, he was onto this whole thing of war is peace, ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery. And this was, you know, again, these very, very perceptive, prescient people, decades and decades ago. And we now live in an Orwellian society where whatever the government says, basically, then it's the opposite of what the government tells you. Does that make sense? So, I mean, everything's Orwellian. So we keep on about, economic growth, GDP. We're all going to get richer, you know, better, brighter future, you name it, any kind of nonsense. Just to keep the proles believing in this whole toxic system. So, this system, I don't know if you can read it, it can only be maintained by keeping the populace dumbed down. If people actually understand what's going on, so I've written there, the current system, economic political system is founded on lies and can only be maintained by the so-called liars, leaders lying continuously. So, you know, it doesn't matter, John Key, Obama, it doesn't matter, Cameron, anybody in political office, they just lie continuously in order to keep this whole thing going. They're well paid to lie, and that's their job. Their job is to lie to the general populace. And most people are too uninformed or stupid to see the truth. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. You know?
Oh, wow. I've always philosophized that nobody's dumber than somebody who thinks they're bright.
Well, I wrote that book, as I mentioned, Burn Baby Burn, in 2001. The economic system is destroying the habitability of the earth for most humans, and it exterminates other species. This is happening right before our. We're actually in the middle of the sixth great extinction event. And it started off with things like orcs and, you know, various species. I mean, we're almost exterminated. Kiwis, moas were exterminated prior to the Europeans arriving here. And this is what humans do. They come into an area and they basically exterminate anything. And the classic example of this was the Easter Islanders, who landed on Rapa Nui off the coast of Chile, covered with trees. And over a period of centuries, they chopped down the trees. Then they went into their statue building stage, chopped down the last tree, and then starved to death, most of them.
I've got something interesting for you here. Have you seen the excavations of those statues on Easter Island?
Yes. Well, not personally, but I've seen pictures of them, yeah.
So you've seen pictures of them digging down beneath the heads and finding out that there's whole tall statues underneath
them. Indeed, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, how the hell could they roll that thing on? You know, it was nigh on impossible just to get a massive head of that size rolling along logs, as was theorized. And now there's like statues that are like 3-4 times the size that they're supposed to have done. And it's like, we're not being told the truth about history at all anymore, are we? Ancient cultures were. All right, hold on. We'll be right back after the break. Okay. Kevin, if you want to talk about this Easter Island thing after the break, it'd be a nice segue. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Moore on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.